we do it like we do it.
Greetings.
Hi.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Or whenever you're listening to this. Who cares?
You know who won't? Oh God, this is so. Isn't it like you know who won't be listening to this episode this week? I can't even say in heaven. And let's say I have Wi-Fi wherever he went. Rest in something, Ornithal James Simpson.
I bet they probably have Wi-Fi down there, but it's very spotty. Very, very spotty.
I feel like OJ would troll us on Twitter from the beyond.
Oh, I mean, yeah, he would.
He was a troll. He's been trolling folks before the internet really was popping. So, like, he was a troll before internet trolls. Really,
he took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Remember when he said he avoids LA in case he runs into the real killer? That was
And he pretty much from the moment of the acquittal. Was that 95? I think. I know the Bronco chase was 94 because we're coming up on 30 years. I think it's June 14th or 16th. I can't remember the date, but the trial I'm pretty sure ended in 95. And then from the moment he was acquitted, he tried to just go right back to LA society as if nothing happened.
Yeah.
Just nothing. Yeah. Like he's like, hey, I'm back. I'm good. We good? And just nope. Nope.
I mean,
one thing,
money can buy you a lot, and money and power and fame bought him a lot. It bought him an acquittal, but it didn't buy him back into like LA society. It did not.
Yeah.
One thing though, which we've talked about, it's almost like not to glorify the murder, but that case did create, and we talk about it, basically PCP. It's the LA society from the case. We have the Kardashians, we have the morally glorious Faye Resnick, which stems into the Hiltons and the Housewives, and it gave us the pop culture that like runs through my head 24/7. I mean, it's given us
so maybe you should thank OJ.
I honestly, it's funny you say that. I was just about to say thank you, OJ, and then realized no.
Since we're a little far off of Easter, but I was gonna be like, Nicole Brown Simpson died first.
Oh God!
I don't think you should say that.
I don't think you should. I don't think you should.
It is true though, and you guys do know I see Faye Resnick around sometimes. I'm always in awe.
That was absolutely the first time I remember. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know what Faye was up to prior to that because I was not part of the, you know, not familiar with their social circles, but everybody remembered that name from the trial.
Oh yeah.
I mean that people still do a double take when she cameos on Housewives. It's like, and they've set it up from Dinner Party from Hell with the Camille and the Playboy spread. Then they brought on Catherine Edwards from the trial on to Housewives specifically for a sit down with Faye. I mean, it's the case still shapes where modern LA, I guess pop culture is different for LA pop culture.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills pop culture.
I mean, the Bronco, everybody remembers where they were. Well, of people of a certain age. I mean, honestly, the Zoomers, I mean, they might be familiar with the Bronco chase, if you can call it a chase. I remember watching it at home. I think it cut into the NBA Finals. So people were really pissed off because
I didn't know till later because I watched it live and I remember I was in my grandma's den getting ready to go to dinner and it was on air. I was like seven.
I was about to say, I was like, this is where I feel our age difference here.
Yeah,
like,
I was in high school.
We were in high school. You were in elementary school then. I was doing Shakespeare in the Park back in my hometown. And I remember somebody had like a little plug in with an antenna television in the trailers in the back, and all of a sudden it was like we'd all like kind of come to work and we're like, dude, did you see what's going on? And like, we're all kind of like in between, like we're all talking about it backstage and we're all talking about it. Like, we're like, what is going on? There's like this electricity in the air and like watching this like unfold and everything. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, what I found out, I didn't know till recently, maybe it was when they did the OJ thing, the mini series, was it like Ryan Murphy and stuff? Is that I didn't know this. My grandma lives in and lived in Encino, and it was, I didn't know the chase started there. So when it started at Rob Kardashian, Robert, the father.
Not a little boy named Rob Kardashian. Yeah.
In Encino. And so it would have been really close by. And I was, I didn't know that part. I just remember the 405, the freeway scenes and the Bronco with the fleet of police cars following him. But I was literally right there. I think that's probably why I am the way I am. It all started as a little
kid. I think so.
The trial made a monster and it wasn't just OJ.
Can you imagine the OJ low speed chase in the age of social media or cell phones? There are so many videos and foot. If you look at stills, because obviously people have been posting a lot of memes lately with the Bronco, and in the shots on the freeway, you can see on the overpasses and on the opposite side traffic, people standing outside their cars watching it happen. But phones didn't exist, so I mean, but just imagine it now. That would have been insane.
I mean, honestly, but also like, and people were listening on the radio. Like they were listening, they got this news, they were in traffic on the radio and they were hearing this, and that's why they were stopping. Like people knew what was happening because of the radio and because of broadcast television. Like that's the crazy thing. I was here in town for the verdict because I was checking out USC, and the funny thing was that it was like the weekend, it was like a couple of days before we were supposed to leave, and basically, I remember we were going there for like the weekend to LA, and all of a sudden the trial ended and the jury went in to deliberate. And we're all like, oh my gosh. And my parents were like, oh. And then all my friends at school were like, oh my gosh, you're going to be there. There might be riots again. And we're like, they're not going to come back with a verdict right away. Like, it's going to be fine. Like, they're not going to. And then on Sunday, they come back with they say they have a verdict. So it's going to get read on Monday or whatever. And I was like, no fucking way. And so we were leaving that morning that the verdict was being read. So we actually got out of South Central, which is where USC is. Oh. And also this is 95. Yeah. So this is only a couple of years after the riots. And so my parents, I mean, being from Texas, yes. Like I'm just saying this is the times and this is what it was. And this is like parents from suburban Texas. We're like, we're not going to stay down here for this. So we went to Beverly Hills. Jordan, you'll appreciate it. Like we went to Beverly Hills. We're like on Rodeo because we're just kind of waiting and listening to KFI AM radio. And it was the funniest thing. Everybody, it was so quiet in the city. So quiet. Everybody just waiting and listening for the verdict. And then it finally came out. And then we finally went to then we needed to leave to go to the airport. And then we could see all these helicopters flying and basically following him from the Santa Monica courthouse up the 405 back up to Brentwood. Like we almost got caught in that traffic, that like kind of not chase, but traffic or melee or whatever. So that was like, so you got informed a lot by that. And so did I. My entree into Los Angeles and like living in Los Angeles was like started with the OJ trial. So it's so crazy.
I was like when the verdict was read, I would have probably been like third grade. It was big for everyone. The yard, it was like lunch or recess, and the yard ladies with their radio walkie talkies gathered all the kids around as the verdict was read. This was big for everyone. I was probably third Everyone. They like literally called everyone over. They're reading it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was in the commons at the high school, and they were rolling in the old school. For the younger listeners, they used to have, you know, in schools, they used to have TVs on these rolling carts because classrooms didn't have TVs, and they rolled that bad boy in, and we all watched it together. And yeah, there was a lot of cheering afterwards. I'm not sure everybody in my high school really understood the ramifications of cheering. I'm not really sure why they were all OJ fans, to be honest. I don't know. Maybe they were fans of the Naked Gun. I don't know. But yeah, there was a lot of cheering, a lot of people running around yelling, "The juice is loose." Clever. But yeah, it was just what a wild, wild time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's some TMZ news that's come out today. Well, because a couple of days ago, right after he died, his O.J. Simpson's attorney claimed that, what is his name? Malcolm Laverne.
I think it's Laverne. Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
I think you're correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that basically the Goldmans and the Browns were not going to see a penny of the civil lawsuit settlement that O.J.'s never paid. Any of. And so he was like, they're not going to see a penny of it. But then today, he's walking back that statement.
Yes, he is. Yes, he
is. And because I think times have changed, and it's like everybody's like, fuck you, dude. Yeah. You fucked around and found out, basically, is what happened to him. But also, he was like, in his thing, he's saying, oh, well, he was basically upset because Ron Goldman's family attorney started like coming after him as soon as he knew that he was dead. And I was like, well, yeah, dude, this guy has been shirking this money and any responsibility for 30 years, mm-hmm. not paying it for 30 mm-hmm. fucking years, drawing this out for 30 fucking, like any, I'm sorry, psychopathic narcissist does. Like, that's what this man has been doing. Mm-hmm. He's been taunting that family, putting them, the Browns and the Goldmans, through so much hell for so long, and the man is finally dead. Ding dong, the bitch is dead. So, you know what? Like, yes, they have a chance to finally get some of that settlement. It might only be $120, but at least they will have gotten it. You know what I mean?
They were never able to collect the money, really, because a lot of his money was in pensions, like his NFL pension, his SAG pension, things that mm-hmm. were off the table. The Goldmans could never get that money. And then basically from the trial through his, I mean, you know, people don't forget, he did go to prison for 8 years for something completely different. He just basically never had he always had shady incomes from the whole time mm-hmm. forward. Like he'd make money in very weird ways by appearances, doing all kinds of memorabilia. And I guess he just found ways to skirt having to pay them. The one thing he did come up with was the book in mm-hmm. 2007, the If I Did It book, which just an insane, insane idea.
Mm-hmm.
If I Did It, when we all know he did. And that guy,
it cost the publisher her
oh,
job.
Really?
What was her name? Regan?
I don't remember the. Regan? I don't remember the name.
She was the biggest publisher in the business, and after that debacle, she lost her job.
Well, the crazy thing is, it got flipped. So his original OJ's original plan was to do with this ghostwriter to write the If I Did It, and then the publisher shut it down.
Judith Regan.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Sorry, Judith.
The publisher shut it down, but then the Goldmans acquired the rights and ended up, they did end up releasing it, but they changed the name from If I Did It to If I Did It Confessions of the Killer to make it sound like OJ was admitting it the entire time. And it was released, and it actually mm-hmm. did fairly well. And the funny thing is it's back on the Amazon charts now. People were so fascinated mm-hmm. by it after he died last week that I think it's at the top of several of the criminology lists. And so the Goldmans finally are making money off of it. Again, nobody knows how much, but at least they're making something out of it.
There's the reason they can profit from it. A killer can't profit. There's a law about that. A killer can't profit from their crime. So any proceeds go to the victim's family.
I think, is that, Even isn't that like the Ted Bundy law or something like that? Or it yeah,
because I know even like prisoners selling art that they make online, it has to, the proceeds go to the victims or their families. So
yeah.
We should start a book club. We could have Facebook, which I've read. Mm-hmm. If I did, I mean, oh, and there were also a series, Dominic Dunn, who is one of my favorites. He came out and chronicled this because his daughter had been murdered mm-hmm. in a similarly tragic way. And he wrote a book about his experience. He was like front row with the press to mm-hmm. the whole thing. I mean, there are a lot of books out there. On top of the reality shows we talk about every single
There've been a lot, obviously a lot of statements, people coming out over the last week. Caitlyn Jenner was not the funniest one, but that was one of the first mm-hmm. ones where she just tweeted good riddance, I think. It was just good riddance. Mm-hmm. And of course, people came at her. They were like, didn't you kill somebody? Which, again, traffic accident. And no criminal charges were filed. But I guess enough people prodded at her with that she released another statement saying, guys, that was an accident. I didn't kill anybody.
On purpose.
Mm. On purpose. On purpose.
Yeah, on purpose. Yeah, on purpose.
There's some stuff went down in the comment section on PCP's post about O.J. Simpson. People beefing actually about Caitlyn Jenner and stuff. And I was like, oh, whoa, this is a lot. But, you know, some people think that
have feelings.
People have feelings and people think that people shouldn't gloat or be happy when somebody dies. And I go, that's on all of us, our own mm-hmm. opinions or whatever. You know, I don't somebody terrible, I'm okay with that.
Well, to quote the character of Bette Davis from Feud, mm-hmm. when Joan Crawford died and she got the call, she said, my mother told me never say bad things about the dead, only good. Joan Crawford's dead. Good.
Yep, exactly.
Pleasant. Mm-hmm.
I haven't, maybe I've just missed it. I haven't heard if like have Marcia Cross and like Christopher Darden, if anybody, like, I haven't seen if they ever said anything about it.
Okay. So Chris Darden, you know, he was running. I don't know if he won. I voted.
I did too.
But he's a public official now. Yeah. Yeah. I went straight for it. And by the way, I noticed on Faye's Instagram, she posted a endorsement for him. And I was like, this is one time I think celebrities should get them. but who was there? I'm not sure about Marsha. Oh, did you say Marcia Cross?
Did I say Marcia Cross? I'm sorry. I did say Cross. I was hoping nobody noticed. But yeah, no, did Marcia Cross of Desperate Housewives, did she comment on it?
Has Terry Hatcher
I did say Cross. I apologize.
Yeah. She has, I'm trying to think. One of the other prosecutors, I think it was a prosecutor, they asked his reaction. He said, I have no reaction. I don't care. That he died, like, just I have nothing more.
I was listening to a podcast that had Carl Douglas on, who was part of the Dream Team, but not one of the more well known. He's such a character. He actually kind of blew up after the that OJ documentary that came out about 10 years ago that won an Oscar for best documentary. It was like a 7-part documentary. I think it was called like OJ Only in America or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
Carl Douglas became like a huge star from that because he's such a character in the way that Johnny Cochran was such an over the top character that he inspired a Seinfeld character like Jackie Chiles. That's how Carl Douglas is. And Carl Douglas, this was his reaction the day of the death. This was last Thursday. And he said, I'm proud of our work on that trial, but he never said anything good about OJ himself. He's like, I'm proud of the work we did. Mm-hmm. I'm very sorry for his family, but I'll leave it at that. So he, even his own attorneys had nothing nice to say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the conundrum always for a criminal defense attorney is that everybody deserves a defense. Everybody does, no matter
that's
what.
And that's what Carl Douglas said, is that like that was his right to have, you know.
Everybody has a right to a defense. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a right to a good defense. Not everybody does get a good defense, but they do have a right to have a good defense, in my opinion. And I think a lot of, you know, attorneys, especially criminal defense attorneys, get a bad rap for honestly doing their job and doing it well. And even though like, but anyway, and his attorneys did their jobs well. I think the prosecution did their job well too. You know, it's just, it's also a different day and age. I think it's so funny how, I think it was that, or maybe it was, it was the Ryan Murphy show. It just made me, it brought up the whole thing about DNA and how DNA is so now is used so easily and so readily, and how we think about like, oh, there's DNA evidence. And that was so cutting edge and so precarious to even use back then that they didn't.
Like they didn't take it as
exactly.
Science.
Exactly. It was like, junk science. It was yeah. like using fingerprint technology back around, you know, the 1900s. You know what I mean? Like now that's just de rigueur. Yeah. Like we take it, you know, advantage of it. So it's so interesting that the way that everything moves. But just because to go back to what I really wanted to get at, just because a criminal defense attorney does their job really well doesn't mean that they believe their client. Or no. even like their client. Mm-hmm. So I think that we always have to like look at like some attorneys and go, do they really like, I don't know, you know? Mm.
Yeah.
So.
One thing, I mean, the statement from the family said he died peacefully surrounded by his kids and grandkids. And of course, it took me a second to process. Those were Nicole's kids.
Two of them. Yeah, he has five kids total. Well, that's the thing that I've always been curious about is the kids went back to live with him. Like, so I don't know what kind of indoctrination they had as kids where they only got his side. So maybe they honestly to this day do not believe it. I don't know.
I'm imagining they don't have a relationship.
But they were there at the end. The one other thing I thought was interesting is that they said that TMZ estimated between 30 and 40 of OJ's friends came through the house to say their final goodbyes, the house in Vegas, but they all had to sign NDNAs NDAs. Did I say NDNAs? God, I can't talk about it. They all had to take the drug, MDMA. No, they all had to sign NDAs and they couldn't have their phones on them. So nobody knows who those 30 people were. None. Like, so who? Mm. I'm guessing it was not Caitlin and not Kris Jenner and not Faye, but we have no idea. And evidently there were people talking about like, well, were his final words? Did he confess? And evidently, the only thing that's come out is one of the last things he said was he asked for water. There was no last minute confession.
Sadly. I don't think he'd ever do that because I don't think he ever thinks he did anything wrong. To be honest with you, no. I think no matter what, I think he still thinks that in his mind that Nicole had it coming and that Ron was there just had it
just
coming
collateral
too.
Damn, like, yeah,
exactly. I don't think Ron was a piece of furniture that accidentally got smashed. To be honest, I don't think he even thought of Ron as a person, in all honesty. He barely thought of Nicole as a person.
Yeah.
That's my mic drop moment. Sorry, let's get real here. But, sorry. Let's end on a bad note. OJ is dead. That is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finally, our national nightmare is over.
Oh, yeah.
Well, should we take a break? Resettle ourselves.
Yeah, let's process that.
All right, let's do that. We'll come back happier and like we're filled with jelly beans and lollipops and rainbows. Well, you know, Coachella started this past weekend and none of us went because all three of us have personalities of our own. However, there always is enough stuff to like talk about, even if we don't go to this beautiful corporate event. Now basically, I mean, it looks like a corporate retreat. As somebody on Twitter said, it looks like a corporate retreat for influencers. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh, it's been that way for a long while. Well, as long as influencers have been around. As I've mentioned a few times on here, I've been to Coachella twice. 06 and 08. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was early enough on in like the Instagram world.
Instagram wasn't around.
It existed, but not
Facebook.
Big.
Facebook existed.
Facebook and MySpace, but I feel like in the influencer title, as far as online, didn't exist. So no. I don't remember people going there just to show off their outfits, to take photos mm-hmm. in front of the art installations. Like the photos that everybody makes so cliched now, I feel like people did legit go for the music. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's maybe not the case anymore. Maybe we're just old.
Maybe old and jaded.
My friends who went back then went for like the ecstasy.
That's true too. Yeah. The drugs. I've mentioned this many times. I have an utter disdain for music festivals and the desert. So a music festival in the desert, definitely not my thing.
I will say this, that I would not have gone as a commoner. Because those people that like sleep on the grounds and bathe on there. No. I have a cousin who worked for AEG Live and Golden Voice who produce it. And he was friendly with the guy who founded it. So he got me, he hooked me up both times when I went, where I got backstage passes, backstage wristbands, where I could go not only to the VIP area where, you know, all the, you know, your Paris's and such. I also could go back to the trailers of all the artists. I stole Kanye's beer, and I could go on stage. I could go on the side stage. So that's the way to go. Not the way the poor's, well, as poor as you can be paying $300 for a weekend music festival, but the regular folks, I wouldn't do it that way. Nope.
How much is it now?
I have no idea, but it was, I mean, back then it was like $250 already for the whole weekend. And now I can't even imagine. Yeah. And now it's two weekends. Yeah, back in 2012 is when it started doing the double weekend, which I feel like kind of diluted a little bit, but at the same time, it's kind of interesting because I don't know which weekend if I still wanted to go, which weekend I'd want to go. Cause the first weekend, everything's new, you know, everything is brand new that you're seeing them. But the second week, because the second weekend, they're just playing the same show, the same lineup, everything. But the second show, they tend to try to one up their performance from the first weekend. So maybe the second weekend is the better weekend to go. I don't know. I don't care. I'm never going again. But it is, you know, I don't know. Maybe some people go to both because they're insane. I don't know.
I mean, it's just like people who have to be in line to get the first new iPhone. Like, you know, some people like have to just do that. That's their kink, you know, that's their thing. Like we just have to go. The only thing I was kind of like, I didn't know, cause I didn't even know who the lineup was. But when I started to see all over my social media that No Doubt had played, and I was like, oh, actually that is something I would have loved to have seen because I do love No Doubt. Like that definitely eats at the heart of like me having moved just to California. And No Doubt blew up the same year that I moved to LA, so it was like that, you know, I love No Doubt so much. Like, why am I gonna feel like crying right now? Like, I love No Doubt. And I don't even really like ska music, but I love No Doubt. I love Gwen. I love everybody. I love Tony. I love everybody. Like, I think they're just such a great band. So anyway,
it was the first time
I would have loved to have been there.
And it was the first time they played together in 9 years. Gwen threw out the old school style. She was wearing like a ridiculous plaid zipper outfit, something she totally would have worn in the early 2000s. She did not break out the bindi on her forehead because shouldn't be doing that. Back in the day, she was probably okay doing it. Not so much anymore. She sounded great. They sounded great. Mm-hmm.
They did.
You know, that's another reason why most people don't feel like they need to go anymore is because the people that put on Coachella do such an incredible live stream. So you can just watch it at home. They have just these incredible cameras, the clarity, the footage, the high def. They have cameras on stage and in the audience. So there's this great, if you look up the video from this weekend, there's the footage of her singing Don't Speak. It was really cool. Because the camera started behind her and worked out, but the crowd was too young for a lot of it. You could tell a lot of them are like, who is, they know Gwen from like The Voice, but they don't know No Doubt. Because Tragic Kingdom that came out in 1995. It's 30 years.
It's as old as the OJ trial.
And they, I think in an attempt to skew younger, they brought out Olivia Rodrigo to sing mm-hmm. with Gwen, to sing one of their more, not obscure, it was one of their hits, but it was the song Bathwater, which is not one of their big hits.
Yeah.
It was from their Return of Saturn album, which was not mm-hmm. the one after Tragic Kingdom that people didn't like as much. That was when, do you remember Gwen was in her adult braces era? Like
yes,
she had adult braces and it actually hurt her from being able to sing live because mm-hmm. you know, adult braces. I remember at the there was at one of the New Year's shows, like Rockin' New Year's or whatever, they attempted to do It's the End of the World as We Know It, but she couldn't sing it fast enough. She fell so far behind, and I blame the braces for it. But they brought out Olivia Rodrigo, who is 3 years younger than that song. That song Bathwater came out in 2000. Olivia Rodrigo was born in 2003. So they clearly brought her out to skew younger, and maybe she does know, no doubt. I'm not accusing that of them just, you know, pandering to the youth, but that was their attempt to get it. Cause the rest of the headliners, it was kind of lackluster. This sales were terrible, terrible by Coachella standards. They did not sell out. It was not, I don't remember the last time Coachella did not sell out, and this one didn't. Back in the day, it used to sell out within hours. And mm-hmm. now this one still had tickets available. The three headliners, people weren't all that excited about. It was Lana Del Rey on Friday, Tyler, the Creator on Saturday, Doja Cat on Sunday. And then No Doubt came in on, I guess technically No Doubt became the headliners. And then
it's like No Doubt. Why wasn't No Doubt a headliner, to be honest?
Well, if you look at the original, when they released the lineup back in like January, No Doubt was, there's the 3 days. It's become such mm-hmm. an iconic poster for it, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. No Doubt was listed at the bottom with no day listed. So we're like, okay, they're going to be a headliner of some kind, but we don't know what day or when. But, you know, I mean, I know Lana Del Rey. I'm not trying to bash any of those three artists, but they're not the head, like that used to be big, big headliners. When I went in 06, Madonna and Daft Punk mm-hmm. were the two big headliners. In 08, it was Prince. I mean, mm-hmm. it was fucking Prince.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the same. There were, as always with Coachella, a ton of special guests brought out by the artists that were performing. Like Lana Del Rey brought out Billie Eilish, and there were rumors she was going to bring out Taylor. But Taylor, because she and Taylor and Lana are like very good friends and they have songs together.
Wait. Taylor was there for the picture of the
weekend.
Oh
my God.
Taylor and Tree. That's right. Who's the bigger star? Teresa Giudice and Taylor Swift took a picture together, and the jokes were hilarious because they're like, we have a feeling Taylor knows who Teresa is, but we have a feeling Teresa doesn't recognize who Taylor is.
And Teresa just only face tuned herself and not Taylor. Not that Taylor needs face tuning, but still, she pulled a Ramona. Or like she only faced tuned herself. Yeah.
And there was also a pseudo big reunion, maybe a burying of hatchets. There were photos seen on Taylor and Travis on the side stage when Bleachers performed. Jack Antonoff, who's like Taylor's mm-hmm. Best friend and producer, but Justin and Haley were up there standing next to Taylor. And they have some, no pun intended, some bad blood because of Selena. Mm-hmm. Taylor and Selena are like BFFs, and mm-hmm. Haley and Selena and Justin and Selena. So that was, people were freaking out seeing the three of them standing next to each other. And it's possible they had zero interaction, but they were standing next to each other, which that, of course, sets people off.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Vampire Weekend. They were like a last minute addition, which, that is a band that would have headlined in the past. And they just added them last minute. Nobody knew that they were coming. They brought out Paris Hilton, the patron saint of our podcast. But
she was there with her aunt, by the way. Well, I don't think they traveled together, but there are pictures of Paris with Kyle Richards and Kesha. Who's the... Side note, Kyle and Kesha are hanging out. Like, she was in Aspen with Kyle the other week.
Interesting.
I don't know. Watch out, Mark.
the Paris thing was like most of these acts that brought out big names like Billie Eilish and Olivia Rodrigo, they were coming out to perform with them. Paris just came out and started playing cornhole on stage with Vampire Weekend. It made no sense. None. Although it made more sense than J Balvin during his set, he brought out Will Smith, and he and Will Smith performed Men in Black together. And Will Smith was even wearing his black suit. So that's a real callback to the 90s that I'm sure nobody in that audience had, you know, they were all way too young for that.
Yeah, that's.
And then cool. Renee Rapp brought out Kesha. And Kesha, they did TikTok together. But as you might be wondering, with the opening line of TikTok, she did change the lyrics. Mm-hmm. Instead of wake up in the morning feeling like P. Diddy, it became wake up in the morning, fuck you, P. Diddy.
Nice.
Which, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the big party, the big invite only party, Neon Carnival that goes on, I think it's Saturday night. It might be Friday night, but it's like the only the A-list celebs, Taylor, Paris, Kyle, Kesha, Ariana Maddox mm-hmm. was there. Mm-hmm. So was Sheena, and the Food God. But the best thing, so that this A-list invite only party DJ'd by James Kennedy.
James Kennedy. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if he's a talent. See, because the thing is, I don't know if he's a good DJ, because on Pump Rules they can't show his play his music because of licensing issues. We have no idea if he's a mm-hmm. good DJ. Just because get booked at the restaurant you know booked at Sir every Tuesday doesn't make you a good DJ.
Well, at least we do know that he's probably a better DJ than Grimes, because Grimes apparently her set kept coming in and out, and then she basically blamed it on outsourcing issues mm-hmm. that she mm-hmm. had outsourced it, like a bunch of stuff, like her BPMs and all these things, to like other people, and it didn't go well. And everybody's like, "Excuse me, you're a DJ. You're mm-hmm. supposed to be doing that work yourself. Like, that's the whole point. Like, if DJing is no longer about actually grabbing a record and playing it and scratching it and mixing it and in that real time, you should be digitally mixing it yourself. Like, how fucking hard is it? Like, I'm not saying that it's easy, because having worked digitally in different ways, but it's time consuming. It is time consuming. And a good DJ does that themselves, because they've got an ear and they've got talent. And Grimes, I don't think you do.
Well,
if you're outsourcing it.
I think it's a safe bet to say Grimes does not make good life decisions.
Oh, I think so.
I think that, and that goes across.
Good child support decision.
Okay, you know what? To be honest with you, you're absolutely right. Maybe that was a great decision. Maybe that was.
I'd have Elon's baby.
She had two of Elon's babies. The second one was a secret baby.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Ugh. Well. There's other music news. Like, Courtney Love is going after Taylor and Beyonce and Madonna. What the fuck is up with that? There's a lot of beef. There's a lot of music beef going on.
Courtney Love is going full scorched earth, as only Courtney Love can. She did this a few years ago. She went after Olivia Rodrigo, like mm-hmm. Because of a promotional photo Olivia Rodrigo did that looked very similar to the cover of the whole album Live Through This. So she went after her then, and of course the Zoomers and the Olivia Rodrigo fan, right? They went after Courtney, being like, "Who is this lady? Who is this old lady?" And then, Courtney Love decided to do an interview in the Standard that came out this week, that she just went scorched earth on everyone, but she only went after women artists for some reason. Like, she started the interview basically by saying that all female artists out right now are all clones of each other and nobody's original. Which, you know, I guess that's an opinion.
It's good. Oh God, I'm just on like social media. I'm using that language. Like, it's giving.
Yeah.
It's giving bitter.
Well, it's also, I'm sorry. Well, it's giving middle-aged pick me is what it's giving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. She's like, 55. Is she middle-aged?
She's middle-aged. 55 okay. If she was in her 60s, I would say no. Now she's fair. Elderly. But fair, like, fair, fair, fair. But like, she's... Even though when I'm 60, I don't probably won't want to be called elderly. But no, she's like, this is when I go, Courtney Love, you really could have been something. But she's still middle-aged pick me. She, because everything she still does is for, is to get in the grace, is for the shock value, but to get into the good graces of men still, and for the appreciation of men. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm going to pick on three of the most influential and powerful women in music to make men happy and to make sure that the men trolls don't come after me. And so that's why, which sucks, because I do think, I've always gone kind of back and forth on Courtney Love, but she's like, it's like, I don't know. Pick a lane, Courtney, pick a lane, but also grow some balls of your own. Like, at least in my opinion, you know, Taylor and Madonna, like they pick their lane. They've all picked their lane. They've all picked their lane, and they've firmly entrenched themselves of like, this is who I am. This is what I believe in. Here I am. And Courtney Love goes back and forth. She went, can fuck off.
She went, she went scorched earth on four of the biggest fan bases you can pop. Like, I almost have to salute the moxie. She first went after Beyonce. She was asked about Cowboy Carter, and she said, as a concept, I love it. I just don't like Beyonce's music. Now the Hive is coming at you. About Taylor, she said, Taylor is not important. She might be a safe space for girls, and she's probably the Madonna of now, burn on two levels, but she's not interesting as an artist. Then she went after, Lana Del Rey, who I don't have many feelings about Lana Del Rey, but she does have a pretty diehard fan base, the Lanotics, they're called. Her quote about Lana Del Rey is, I think she really should have just taken 7 years off. I don't even know where that figure 7 years came from. And then when asked about Madonna, she just said, I don't like Madonna. She doesn't like me. Which, that part is very true.
Very true. Okay,
so there's personal beef there. Because I was going to be like, well, I can't name a song of yours, Courtney Love. But
I don't know where the beef with Madonna started. But I posted some gifs about them yesterday. It was the 1995 VMAs is where
when she was throwing her makeup up at Madonna.
Yeah,
like up there.
Yeah. Yeah, Madonna was doing an interview with Kurt Loder on this elevated platform. And the interview is great because Madonna, 1995 Madonna, top of the world. And she's
Tom Ford Gucci, looking awesome and hot.
I think, was that a Ray of Light era? Or was that, I don't remember.
It was right before Ray of Light. Because she hadn't had her daughter yet. She hadn't had Lourdes yet, but yeah.
And she's talking to Kurt Loder, and you could see just something flies up and hits her in the back, and she turns around, and then it gets Courtney Love down on the street yelling, just throwing things and yelling. And Madonna's quote is, oh, it's Courtney Love down there. I think she wants attention. And it was, I don't know if that's where their feud started, but that's what, as soon as I saw these quotes about her, like her bashing Madonna, I'm like, oh, does this go back to the 1995 VMAs? Because that's really funny.
From Madonna speaking truth on Courtney Love. Exactly.
So to go after the Hive, the Swifties, the Lunatics, and I don't know what Madonna fans are called. I don't even know if Madonna fans need a name, to be honest.
We don't need names. And look, this is my thing. I will say this. You're allowed to like not like somebody's music. It's allowed to not be your thing. The fact that like Beyonce's music may not be Courtney Love's thing would not surprise me, to be honest with you. But you also don't have to be rude about it either. And you know that Courtney Love is rude about it.
Well, at least she has some self-awareness, because one of her ending quotes, her like mic drop quote in this Standard article, was she said, I've always wanted to be known as a bitch. Being liked was never my thing. So I guess she's true to her. She's living her truth, as the kids say.
She is, or on brand.
By the way, Courtney Love will be turning 60 in a few months.
Oh, so she's 59. Oh.
She's 59, and July 9th, she'll be 60.
Oh, she's about to be elderly pick me in my book. So.
A cranky old.
I'm curious. No. I don't know I wonder if the Standard set up this interview with her because we just hit the 30-year anniversary of Kurt Cobain's suicide. And it's probably something that Courtney doesn't really like talking about still, but I wonder if that was, cause what, I don't know what else Courtney Love has done to do this big interview, unless they were like, oh, let's try to get her on the 30th anniversary. And then they had no idea she was going scorched earth on every female artist out there.
Another reason that I think that she's an elderly pick me. I'm going to go elderly now. Elderly pick me is because she got so much grief when Kurt Cobain killed himself. Actually not grief. She got a lot of blame. She got a lot of blame. People blamed her as the reason why he killed himself. And she was not the reason why he killed himself. That man was very ill and very sad. Very, very, like, he had his own reasons. And Courtney Love was not the reason. So I could see that she would go scorched earth, or she would go elderly pick me. So to kind of deflect that, because she's afraid that that's going to start coming back around to her.
Yeah.
With that. So let me go ahead and start getting the guys on my side again before this all comes down again. So I don't know. That's just mine. I don't know. Who knows? I shouldn't get in the mind of Courtney Love.
I just love that the 90s, this our entire episode, and honestly the news of the last week has just been so 90s heavy, which makes me happy. That was our era.
I know Jordan loves the aughts so much, but I go, I don't know. I think I was too depressed back then. But the 90s, yeah, I love the 90s.
I love the aughts. I love that era, the Holy Trinity era, as we like to talk about. But the 90s just hold a special place in my heart. Or at least where my heart used to be.
Yeah.
The cold, dark space where my heart used to be has so much love and affinity for the 90s.
I like that. Yeah. Well, this week, I don't know if you guys watch Hot Ones, the Hot Wing interview / like celebrity show on YouTube.
They make the best gifts.
They always do.
The people reacting.
The best gifts are the best, like mm-hmm. short, like little memes and stuff like that. They're so great. It's been on for so long. And I remember thinking it was stupid at the beginning. And then slowly, like the more YouTube I watched, I was like, oh, these are really funny. And the host, Chris, I forget his last name. He has really good questions too.
Yeah,
it's interesting. He does his research and he does great questions.
He gets some of literally the biggest people you could. He's got Beyonce. He's got Obama. Like people just are drawn to it. The whole concept's great anyway. Like, I don't know that concept's brilliant because the interviews do get funnier and funnier as they get more and more uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. So this week he had Conan O'Brien on, who I'm not a late night TV fan. I've never really watched late night television but I am a fan of Conan, and Conan has popped up more and more on my YouTube because of his podcast. And so I've watched a little bit more and more. But then the ironic thing is that I am friends with a bunch of people who used to work on Conan. They used to work on, because I have a friend who started
NBC
to work at
the TBS one.
Both.
Oh, wow.
Shout out to friend of the pod, Jessica. We worked together, and she left the BBC to go work as Andy Richter's assistant when The Tonight Show came out, when Conan came out to work on The Tonight Show. And so through that, and then she stayed on, after the whole Tonight Show debacle, and stayed on like through TBS Conan. And so I became friends with, because she and I stayed friends after working at the BBC, and I became friends with a bunch of her colleagues from Conan. And so I've been friends with them now for like a decade now too. But the funny thing is I don't really watch a lot of Conan, but I have watched this. But when I saw that he was on Hot Ones, and I was like, okay, this is going to be great. And it is one of the best episodes of Hot Ones I've ever seen. I had to send it to the group chat because a lot of them don't watch. A lot of the people who work on that show that I'm friends with don't watch Hot Ones. And I was like, you guys have to watch this. It's so funny. If you've never watched a Hot Ones before, you have to watch a regular one, a quote unquote regular one, before you watch this, just to know how extreme Conan goes with this Hot Ones, because it's amazing. It's amazing. I was crying laughing.
Right. I did not know that was the genesis. So the reason I saw this Conan thing over the weekend was on Twitter. People kept posting videos, like old clips, saying like, this is a Twitter, this is a Conan O'Brien appreciation. It was almost like so many people were posting clips of old Conan. I had to Google. I'm like, oh my God, something happened to Conan? Like, it almost looked like people are eulogizing him. And I was like, oh God, please tell me nothing happened to Conan. But it turned out,
anytime.
Yeah. And especially when people are what it reminded me, I was telling you guys, is this the Martin Short thing last year when that guy wrote that thing about Martin Short saying, I don't find him funny. And then the entire internet was like, no, fuck you. We think he's hysterical. And they just started showing clips. It was just all love. Like, I don't know anybody that doesn't like Conan. Like, you can say that you didn't watch him much, but Conan O'Brien just seems like a beloved man.
I went to a filming of his, I guess it was Tonight Show, because Billy Mays was on, the OxyClean guy. I have a thing for infomercials. I've loved them. And he was on and my brother got tickets.
I appreciate that. He was only on the Tonight Show for 7 months. So that's pretty impressive. Yeah. He did late night for...
He did late night for 16 years,
the Tonight Show for 7 months, and then he did the TBS show for 10 years.
Yeah.
Unless, I don't know what now, you know, I'll have to Google, I don't know which version of what show it was, but it was Conan in Burbank and an infomercial icon.
Oh, because I've been looking it up.
Rest in power.
Well, I will say this unequivocally, because like we've said stuff about a lot of people, like knowing that they are not good people. Conan O'Brien is a great person. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. Like working, knowing about a dozen people who worked with him and worked for him. Like I even like, I'm not great friends with Sona, but I know Sona. Like so, like
throughout, she's
like.
Awesome.
She's hilarious. Like, the reason I
couldn't join you guys on Sunday is I was in Chicago and I was driving my parents back on. I'm driving my back from Chicago, and they love Conan's podcast. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and we just so happened. So this is why it was all in my head when we're listening to three episodes of Conan's podcast, and I get back and I'm like, why is Conan trending? What on earth is happening?
Yeah,
and his podcast is incredible, and I highly recommend. You know, he brings on celebrities, one-on-one interviews. We listened to the Larry David one that was more recent.
Oh.
Highly recommend it. If you have time to listen to a podcast after you finish this one, because the celebrities genuinely love him. So they are so much more, because they're allowed to cuss and everything. They're so much more open with him. Larry David was just full Larry David, where normally when he does TV interviews, he pulls back a little bit. But this was just full Larry David, hysterical. The Harrison Ford one. Harrison Ford, who's a legendarily bad interview. Because it's kind of his whole shtick is that he's a bad interview. Like he goes for grumpy old man. But for whatever reason, Conan and Letterman to an extent back in the day, but Conan pulls something out of Harrison Ford where Harrison loves Conan so much. The interviews are insanely funny. Like it's the personality that you expect Harrison Ford to have when you see him. I mean, he's fucking Indiana Jones, he's Han Solo, but he's so boring in real life. But then when Conan's on, you're like, okay, no, that's Han Solo. He's back.
Right.
And Sona's on it. Like she's hysterical. Uh-huh. Like it's so highly, I could not recommend his podcast enough.
So good. Like, yeah, listen to it after you, if there's only two podcasts you ever listen to, it should be PCP and Conan. And like also watch the clips on YouTube too, especially like the Harrison Ford ones, because Harrison is so dry and so funny. A lot of it is also done with his face too. Like you can just like watch him and you're like, this is hilarious. And I was watching something, it was the Hot Ones, I believe. And Conan said that he's kind of enjoyed the podcast. He's enjoyed the podcast and the fact that like he gets to sit down and talk with people more than on the show. Cause you know, it was like bing, bang, boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then let's move on so nice to meet you. Let's move on to the next thing. And here he gets to like dive in more and have like more fun with people. And like with the Aubrey Plaza one, that was hilarious too. And, he talks to anybody. Yeah.
The interviews are so good. He's so goofy. It's really a testament to just what kind of genius he was. Like, I don't know if you remember when he took over Late Night in 1994, I think it was.
93.
Nobody had any idea who he was.
No.
He was this like young. I mean, he wasn't that young. He was in his 20s, I guess.
Maybe late 30s. 20s, yeah.
But he was such a prodigy as a writer at SNL and then at Simpsons that NBC was like, yeah, okay, let's give him a try. out of Lorne Michaels had a lot to do with it behind the scenes, but like he was replacing David Letterman on the late night. That's maybe not quite as big as replacing Carson, but it was up there. And people were like, who the hell is this guy? So that just tells you how talented he is, that people were like, okay, yeah, we'll just give him this iconic show out of nowhere.
I think right now, like kind of the, in my opinion, like Conan Renaissance is A, with social media and the way media is nowadays. B, because he kind of has this niche comedy style that is not for everybody. Him and Robert Smigel, like they have a specific type, him and Jeff Ross, like they have a specific type of like kind of like comedy that they do. But I think it does appeal to more people than you realize. And like me, like I'm not a late night TV type of person, but I do enjoy that style of comedy. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like this allows me to enjoy it more. And so I think it gets out to people more. And lastly, I think because, like I said, he's such a really good person and he surrounds himself with really good people. He's built these relationships over the last 30 years or so that he's able to rely on them, and he brings good people. Like he doesn't interview assholes. You know what I mean? Like he interviews good people. He interviews people that like will give him, like he's not going to interview people who are just going to sit there and only want to talk about whatever film they've got, you know, there to promote. Like he's going to have like real conversations. I even just think about like, you know, my friend who was working for Andy, like we actually went and saw Jimmy Pardo has a show at UCB once a month. It's almost like a after midnight type of show, but he's been doing it for a very long time since before midnight and after midnight. And Andy was going to be there. Ironically, we already had tickets. And then, so she told him, Andy, that we were going to be there. And then the funny thing was when Andy came out, he was like looking in the audience for like, and I was like, is he looking for Jessica? Like, aww. Is he looking for Jessica? And it was almost like kind of like a little kid when a little kid does a play or has a dance recital and they're looking out, you know, for their parent to like see and then do a wave. Like literally. And then finally, like after the show, when we kind of came down, he was like, oh, hi. Aww. Like Andy's a sweetheart. Conan is a sweetheart. Like I think in this day and age when it's very easy, even for myself, to get very negative and think that the world is a horrible place and that, you know, there's a lot of like mean people and not good people, especially in Hollywood. Like there are really good people, and really good people can succeed. And I think Conan and the group of the people that he surrounds himself with and that he works with is a perfect example of that. And also a perfect example of, yes, success can come young and early, like when he got the late show, in replacing David Letterman there. But that man's had a lot of ups and downs. And it's not been easy for him. And I feel like he's reaching a high point that probably he didn't even realize was there. And it's happening now in his 60s.
Well, it's the same thing with the Martin Short last year. And you see it, like these beloved people. You know, it's like people say that people should be eulogized while they're still with us. Not that Conan's anywhere near the end of it, obviously.
No.
But like, what's the whole, eulogizing somebody should be for that person. So when you see things like when somebody comes at Martin Short and the whole world is like, no, we're going to show you everything great he's ever done. Mm-hmm. And then they do this for Conan now, where it's just go through and watch all those clips that people are posting from Conan's shows over the years. And it's just so brilliant and so love. And no, I didn't see a single person who had anything bad to say. All of the replies in all of those tweets were like, oh my God, I love this bit. Here's another great bit. And it was just, if you just fell down the Conan rabbit. But again, like I said, I got out of the car and I was like, oh my God, what happened? Like, why is everybody, it's like, okay, I understand that Conan's beloved, but what happened this weekend? Why? So when I saw the hot ones, I'm like, oh, thank God.
Thank God. Yeah. Well, I think that's a really good positive high note to end on.
Yeah,
we started with OJ and we're going to end with Conan.
Started with murder, ended with, yes.
With killing them with kindness. That's what we're going to end with.
Boom.
Well, unfortunately, Jordan had to leave us, but please don't ever really leave us. And you know how you can always stay with us? By following and subscribing to us, by subscribing on wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, wherever, we're everywhere. And also make sure that you follow us on our socials, which is Pretty Corrupt Podcast on Instagram and TikTok, and Pretty Corrupt One on Twitter. Now, I guess it's called X. And no, also, it's Twitter, no matter what. You can also follow us individually. You can find links to all of our individual socials through those accounts. And also, please, please, it's always helpful to on Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. It really does help. The algorithm helps get us out there. Our little podcast that we've been doing now for about almost 4 years now. So get some and make sure you share it with your friends, share it with your criminal defense attorneys, share it with your publicists, share it with your assistants.
With Marsha Cross, maybe?
Marsha Cross, or Christopher Darden.
Or Clark. No, I got you there. Yeah, I got you there.
You did get me.
Yeah.
Also, share it with Conan, because maybe Conan will promote us. We can do a cross promotion. You know, it could benefit him. He could use some more listeners. Yeah.
Maybe share it with Courtney Love, but I don't know if I want to see what her response might be in print. So maybe don't share it with her.
No, don't share it with her.
Yeah.
Why did you even put that out there?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're forgiven. You're all right. Well, do you want to say goodbye?
Adios. Like we do it.